Blog Talk Radio.
This week's show is sponsored by Audible, a leading provider of spoken audio information and entertainment. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want with Audible.
It's time for Making Sense with Steve Laser.
Y'all ready for this?
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Making Sense with Steve Laser and the Rude Pundit, the show that breaks down the top issues in the last week in politics, strips out all the nonsense, and provides you the best analysis in political media. Speaking of the Rude Pundit, Lee, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing good. How about you?
I am doing quite well today, sir. And I have to say, I am excited to talk about some of the stuff we are going to be talking about today. I am rearing to go. So let me just get into it right off the bat.
It's an exciting time.
It is an exciting time. What is that old Middle Eastern curse go? How does that go? May you live in exciting times or something like that? I don't know.
Oh.
Something along those lines. And we definitely are living in exciting times now, that's for sure. And, well, we've got an ambitious program to get through. We're going to dissect the Ted Cruz announcement and his chances for the presidency. Then the five-year anniversary of Obamacare was yesterday, so we're going to talk about how the program has fared versus Republican doom and gloom predictions. Then there's an interesting story. I love this one. It's just starting to get hot, folks, and it concerns an allegation that Israel spied on the Iran nuclear negotiations and then passed the results of that intelligence to Republican lawmakers in Congress to try and undermine the administration's efforts to make a deal. Now, the Rude One and I are really going to spend some time getting into that one. Then we're going to have a special guest on to discuss rights for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered community. If you listen to the show a lot, you know that that's something that's really important to me. And I know, believe it's also important to you, too, Lee, right? So,
yes, it is.
And in addition, if you want to write to us and give us your opinion of any topic we cover, write to makingsenseletters@yahoo.com, and we may just read your opinion on the air. Again, that's makingsenseletters@yahoo.com. Our first segment on the Ted Cruz announcement that he is running for president starts now. And firstly, let me just say on record that I'm on record, a few months ago as predicting that Ted Cruz would win the Republican nomination. I stand by that. And from only the perspective, I want to make this clear, from only the perspective of not wanting to be wrong about that, I'm happy to say that he at least announced. So I'm not wrong so far. He announced. But from all other perspectives, it sickens me. The things that he said when he announced sicken me. And, you know, the other reason that it sickens me, Rude One, is how calculated that it has been. And he has been for the last couple of years. We're going to get that into that in a minute. What's your initial perception of his announcement?
Well, I mean, first of all, his announcement was hilarious. I think we can all agree that being in front of a group of students forced to attend his rally or get a $10 fine and then some kind of demerit. That I guess I don't know. Maybe they can't have free masturbation time at Liberty University if they lose too many demerits. wouldn't that be great though? At Liberty University, you have to earn your masturbation time. That's it. I'm gonna believe that even if it's not true. But it was also, I mean, it was just a bizarre announcement with this constant emphasis on imagine, like it was some cross between John Lennon and an extra creepy Michael Jackson special and some kind of Disney animation, you know, imagine this. And then it was imagine Ted Cruz's past and the past of his family. And then imagine a future with a president, Ted Cruz, you know, kicking ass and taking names for conservative causes. it was genuinely, and then coloring it all with this sheen of Christianity, and how he wants to turn this into a Christian nation. You know, today, roughly, for instance, he said, today, roughly half of born-again Christians aren't voting. They're staying home. Imagine instead millions of people of faith all across, not a bad Ted Cruz, all across America coming out to the polls and voting our values.
You said a whole lot there. You said a whole lot there. And, you know, John Fugelsang said that there's something, I don't want to misquote him, so I'm just going to say I'm paraphrasing him, made a joke about how at Liberty University he gave an announcement speech where people were forced to listen to him. And I think you mentioned that earlier. I thought that was hilarious. My friend Rick Unger, though, he's a Democrat who writes for Forbes. He noted that this is the first time that someone has announced a run from the presidency from Liberty University, which he pointed out, according to its own description, offers, quote unquote, a world-class Christian education for the purpose of training champions for Christ. And Unger noted that for people like him and people like me, what does that say about what a Cruz presidency would be like? For somebody who's Jewish or atheist, or Buddhist, or a Muslim, or somebody who just doesn't care about religion at all. What does that mean for us? He's not our president, I guess.
He's pretty explicitly saying that if you don't believe in Christ, he's not your leader. You know, I wrote this week about imagine that he gave a different, and imagine he was a different person, slightly different person. Imagine he was Muslim, and that Liberty University was actually a Muslim university, where 10,000 Muslims were gathered to listen to him announce and talk about doing everything for the glory of Allah. You know, imagine how that would be taken. Imagine talking about, you know, his father becoming saved by Allah and studying the Quran. Can you imagine what that would have been like? People would have lost their fucking minds over that.
Well, you know, it goes back to, in a way, I have to say, the thing about Cruz, I do find it refreshing in a way, because I believe that if Republicans all did what was really on their minds, what you would get is Ted Cruz. So he's at least honest from that perspective of what the Republican Party would really do if completely shackled from any kind of constraints. This is what you get. And this goes back to that particular whole Christian thing, goes back to I talk with Jews who are conservative and who vote Republican, who say, you know, Republicans love us. They love the state of Israel. They want so many good things for us and for it. And then you have Cruz on the very other side of this saying, we're Christian. We're fighting for Christian values. Be Christian, or you're not with us. You're not for us. You can't reconcile those two things. The support that Republicans have for the state of Israel when they show it is a very, very twisted and self-serving support that they would withdraw in a second if it suited them. They're not for Israel. They're for their particular interests that happen to coincide with Israel at that moment and could go away at any time. But Lee, I wanted to talk about a couple of specific things that he said, and I love the folks over at factcheck.org. They have actually been fact-checking Ted Cruz for years. If anybody wants to go to fact-check...
I'm sure they have a bureau dedicated to it.
Well, you know, he's just been in the Senate since 2013, and they already have three pages of statements by him that they have fact-checked, and most of them are mostly false, completely false, or pants on fire ratings. So he's really, you know, off to a pretty interesting start as far as that's all concerned. But I want to go over a couple of things that he said. And this is, again, from Fact Check. They said that he railed against a government that seeks to ban our ammunition. In fact, the Obama administration sought to ban only a certain type of armor-piercing bullet, not all types of ammunition, and quite frankly, that proposal has since been postponed, so that's likely not even going to happen.
Right,
Cruz claimed that as a result of the right? So Cruz claimed that as a result of the Affordable Care Act, millions have lost their health insurance. Actually, 10 million people on net gained health insurance between September 2013 and December 2014, according to the Urban Institute. Cruz claimed that as a result of the law, millions have been forced into part-time work. Well, there's no exact solid figure there, Lee. As factcheck.org reports, they polled a couple of economists. They said there might be some impact of people who have lost some hours due to the Affordable Care Act. That is possible. They estimated at most a couple of hundred thousand people that that's happened to, but it's more likely just a result of the economic downturn that we're all still, to some extent, suffering from. So factcheck.org believes that that statement by Cruz is not correct. This is one that I love, Lee. I think you're going to like this one. Cruz vowed to repeal, quote, every word of Common Core, which he called an effort by the federal government to dictate school curriculum. Now, Cruz actually said this a couple of months ago. He said it actually because the standards were not developed by and voluntarily adopted Cruz also warned that the Affordable Care Act puts the government. Yeah. Doesn't seem to get that the law doesn't. The law.
Sorry about that. I just. Yeah, I lost you for a second.
Oh, sorry. You know, if anything. The law comes between a person and their insurance company, not between a person and their doctor, and it forbids the insurance company from capping their coverage or charging a person based more on health status. I got one more of these. Go ahead.
Oh, well, let me just add to that. And guess what? Because Ted Cruz's wife is leaving her job to help him run for president, they're going to lose the health insurance they have under her. Guess what Ted Cruz is going to sign up for?
I heard about this. He's signing up for Obamacare, isn't he?
He has to go on the federal exchange in order to get health insurance. The federal exchange is Obamacare.
Now, I wonder what that's all about. Something tells me that there is a ploy in there somewhere.
I'm sure there is, that it's to prove how awful or how difficult it was. I'm sure that no matter what happens, he's going to, you know, he'll hype how terrible everything is.
Yeah. It's just, I think this says a lot. Cruz is being portrayed. He has portrayed himself. He set himself up as the perfect conservative. That's his shtick. That's what he's been doing since he's been elected. I'm going to get into that more in just a second. But since he's been elected to the Senate, I think it says a lot that the person who the folks on the extreme right are saying is their perfect candidate has to go on and say all of these lies.
Aren't those lies really the center of what we now consider modern conservatism? I mean, you have to believe the opposite of what the facts show in order to cling to any of these beliefs. I mean, you have to believe lies in order to believe that the Affordable Care Act was a failure, because the actual truth of it is it has been a success. And frankly, the only thing that can stop the success is this bullshit case that's before the Supreme Court. And even with that, you have Republican governors that are saying, holy shit, if you overturn the subsidies to states that help with their exchanges, with people getting on the federal exchange, then Congress, you have to do something. And Republican governors saying they don't want their citizens abandoned if the Supreme Court thinks. So, yes, Ted Cruz is spouting lies, but that's what they've got. That's all that's their ideology now.
I just think it's such a striking contrast between what is considered the extreme right and the extreme left in American politics. You have these Ted Cruzes, you have Michelle Bachmann, you have all of the, you have Rand Paul, Ron Paul, all these people. They say these ridiculous things on the political right. On the political left, yes, we have people who say things that are inconvenient. They say things that they propose policies that might be difficult to get passed. You know, we have our Dennis Kuciniches and, you know, Bernie Sanders and people like that, but they don't lie. The things that they say are true. You know, they just may not be practical.
Well, you know, here's the thing, though, is our crazies on the left don't get elected. I think it's sort of unfair to say that, yes, for the Democrats that have been elected to office, you know, Bernie Sanders, possibly Elizabeth Warren would be sort of your furthest out in the Senate to the left. But as far as what the extremes of left-wing ideology are, ours don't get elected. They don't have anybody with money to back them. They just simply don't. They simply stay in the shadows and show up at protests.
Yeah, and don't lie. That's the thing, you know. I mean,
well,
you know,
I've always said that Democrats need to lie better. that apparently people want to believe lies, and Democrats need to tell bigger and better lies than the Republicans.
Oh my God! Could you imagine if they did? Can you imagine if Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren went out onto national television and said something that was a lie? You would. Conservative media would be talking about it for months. You wouldn't hear the end of it. Every time name was mentioned, their name would be associated with that lie.
Yep. Well, but you know, again, I always fall back on the, you know, that Democrats will force somebody out who was flirting with somebody over Twitter, which is Anthony Weiner, and Republicans will reelect the guy that regularly went to see whores, which is David Vitter from Louisiana, who will probably be Louisiana's next governor after Bobby Jindal.
Oh, well, I mean, we can go to another example, too, right? The guy, the governor from South Carolina or North Carolina, you know, and this is the thing. We Democrats don't harp and remember this stuff, but he was hiking the Appalachia Trail a week.
Yeah.
Nobody could find
him. South Carolina. Yeah.
Yes. I want to say Sanders, but it's not Sanders. I'm thinking of Bernie Sanders. That's why. But and then he runs for Congress. And I remember talking about this when he did that. Runs for Congress, and I said, these Republicans, who less than a decade ago were making such a big deal about Bill Clinton, or around a decade ago, having this affair, are now going to nominate and elect this guy who not only had an affair, he left his job with no way to contact him for over a week to have this affair, disappeared, and then they nominated him after he resigned, they nominated him and elected him to Congress. That's how much Republican values are worth and Republican opinion.
That was Mark Sanford.
Mark Sanford, I'm sorry, that's right.
Yes, who was the governor of South Carolina from 2003 to 2011. And, and the whole hiking the Appalachian Trail thing. Yeah, for Republicans, it takes something like, I mean, honestly, the thing that chases Republicans away is if it turns out that they're secretly gay. Or, you know,
right,
like a Larry Craig. And while there's no confirmation of this, you know, certainly one could question Aaron Schock. And what were the other shoes that were going to drop? And how fashionable were those shoes?
You know what's sad, though? I almost thought the Republican Party was starting to make some progress. But more about that later. But that's still the thing for them. And obviously, at Liberty University, social conservatism he was playing up. And I just think, again, I think he's going to win the nomination, and I think that whole social conservatism is going to be back in front and center.
I got to ask you, and I think we've talked about this before, because I remember when you made this prediction. Tell me again why you think he's going to win the nomination. Is it just because of the crazies in the coming out to vote in the primary?
You know, I have been following different conservative discussion forums for probably the last 8 to 10 years. And I have watched them and their disappointment at the nomination of McCain and the nomination of Romney. And I really think there is a different tenor, not just in those places, but throughout a big portion of the rest of the Republican Party. I think that this whole idea of the GOP establishment, they abbreviate it as the GOPE. If you don't travel in Republican circles, you don't know what that is. But among Republicans, GOPE is a thing. They don't want to nominate the establishment candidate. They really want a real conservative, and I think they're determined to get it this time. I don't think they're going to be satisfied with a Jeb Bush. I don't think Chris Christie is going to get anywhere near the nomination. Marco Rubio.
My prediction, by the way, about Chris Christie is I actually think there's a chance he doesn't run.
I don't know. He or his camp put out a statement today saying that Cruz's announcement would have no impact on his announcement that he was going to announce when he planned to. He wasn't going to move it up or anything like that. So I mean,
oh,
it's
okay.
Possible.
Sorry, I missed that. But I sort of think that there's a chance that Christie doesn't run. I think that there's too much just a wave of shit coming towards Christie, and he knows it.
Well, that would be a good – well, you know, any Republican who doesn't run is a good thing, in my opinion. So
exactly.
I hope he doesn't. And quite frankly, until somebody announces and says that they're running, there's always a chance that they won't. And, this for Republicans, I don't know if they realize this. As many people who it seems are going to run on that side, and as many crazy people who are going to run on that side, I think this entire nomination season is going to be – even uglier than last time. Last time was bad. I think this time is going to be even worse. And I think before it's done, I think the Republicans are going to really experience a great deal of embarrassment. But we're starting to really go over time here on this Cruz segment. I want to say one other thing, and I really want to emphasize this, that I believe this entire thing of Cruz being this ultra-conservative, this perfect conservative, is a huge – calculated, cynical, and false sham that Cruz planned from the moment he started running for Senate. I think he identified exactly what I'm talking about, this desire among the far right to have this pure, unadulterated, complete conservative standard bearer. I think he saw that. He's not a dumb guy. I've tweeted about stupid things that he said. Last week, I made this whole joke about the Ivy Leagues and graduating dumb people. Cruz is not dumb. Alan Dershowitz, whatever you think of him, he's not a dumb guy either. He had Cruz in his class at Harvard Law School. He said he was one of the brightest students that he ever had. I think we should not underestimate Ted Cruz. I think he knows exactly what he's doing. But I think it's all a lie. And one of the reasons that I think it's all a lie, if you look at his record as solicitor in Texas, a lot of the things that he fought for were not particularly conservative. The arguments that he made, for instance, on the Second Amendment, and this is something that, again, my friend Rick Unger noted in an article on Forbes, he argued the Heller case in 2008 before the U.S. Supreme Court. And when he argued that case in 2008, he argued that the 4 million assault weapons let me back up a little bit. He told the justices that the court could strike down what was at issue at that point, which is the D.C. gun ban, without impacting on the many state regulations prohibiting or limiting ownership of certain weapons, and that included assault weapons. Now, that's not a very conservative argument. The conservative argument would be you've got to strike down all of those laws. And in fact, in 2013, I don't know if you remember this, Lee, when he had that really nasty confrontation with Dianne Feinstein on the Senate, in the Senate floor.
Right.
He was very dismissive toward her. He said, you don't know the Constitution. This was over the Heller case, except that in 2013, he argued that the 4 million assault weapons currently in use were, according to the law, quote unquote, common use, which would mean, according to Heller, that they should be legal and the bans on them should be stricken. So this is a very different Ted Cruz that we're seeing right now than the one that existed prior to his election to Senate. This is all part of a plan. We're going to see more of these things as people really start to dive into his record. Prior to 2013, I think people are going to see a very different Ted Cruz. And the other point of that is the filibuster that he engaged in back in – boy, I'm losing track of time here. I think it was 2013. To try to get Obamacare overturned. You know, I made an argument at the time to Sean Hannity that he threw the entire Republican Party under the bus. I'm not the only one who did it. Grover Norquist said he dragged the entire Republican Party over glass. This is a guy, Lee, who has loyalty and allegiance to no one but himself. And if that doesn't scare everybody about the potential of having a guy like that as president, it should. Okay, the president should be the president of all the people. We've noticed already that he has a problem with that, making his announcement at Liberty University. But this is also a guy who really ultimately has no principles and is loyal to no one. And that's a scary thought to have somebody like that with their finger on the nuclear button in the White House making all those kinds of important decisions on all of our behalfs. What do you think, Lee?
I'm not going to argue with you about that. I think that you're, he's a frightening guy. But whenever I see these conservatives doing this, the conservatives that I think, and this is where you and I differ, where I think the conservatives that do not stand, you know, a fleas fart in a hurricane chance of becoming president, that there is something they are trying to do, that they are enhancing their brand. When Mike Huckabee runs, chance in hell that Mike Huckabee is getting elected president. But Mike Huckabee enhances Mike Huckabee Co. And so I see this as some kind of angle that Cruz has for something larger. Now I could be wrong. It could be he is a true believer who thinks that this is his time and that invisible sky voices have told him this is the time for him to do it. But I always wonder what's the con? What's the con this time?
All right. We're going to have to leave it there because we've gone way over time on this segment. When we come back, folks, Lee and I will discuss the 5-year anniversary of Obamacare and how well it has done. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Do you know our sense of smell is the most important after our sense of sight? It's the most powerful as well, and it triggers memories and emotions, and is the most compelling aspect to make you feel wonderful. At scentaprises.com, that's scenterprises.com, we take you on a fragrance journey to learn about the magic and mystery of scent to create your very own custom perfume. We have an exquisite range of perfume blends which spans the entire fragrance palette, from sparkling citrus notes to light, fresh, and clean herbals and marine notes, florals that everyone will love, such as fresh, gentle, sexy, and heady florientals. And if you prefer sophisticated fragrances, our blends of spicy, amber, woodsy, musky, mossy, and luscious gourmand vanilla notes are warm, sensual, and combine beautifully with all the blends. So why wear what everyone else wears when you can create your very own custom perfume? Be different. Contact Sue at scentaprises.com. Scentaprises, our business makes you sensational.
Welcome back to Making Sense with Steve Laser and the Rude Pundit. Lee, 5 years ago, Obamacare was enacted, and we heard some very interesting claims from Republicans back then, but what are your first impressions of what the last 5 years have been on Obamacare and what the effect of it has been for people?
You know, let me bring this to a personal level. My sister, in her family, my sister lost her job, and she lost it because the company was downsizing, and so her area was eliminated. She was bought out. She was given a very generous separation package, but you know, after the time on healthcare for that ran out, she had not gotten new full-time employment, and she went on COBRA. And the COBRA was, it's her husband, and they have two kids. And one of her kids has a health condition that sometimes requires her to get a treatment that costs tens of thousands of dollars. I think it's more like $12,000. Still a lot of money for a treatment. She was on the COBRA. The COBRA cost, I cannot remember exactly how much, but I believe it was somewhere in the neighborhood of $1,800 a month. And, of course, you get to stay on COBRA for, you know, up to 18 months, sometimes extended longer. And so when the Affordable Care Act came into being, when she was able to go on the exchange, she was able to get the platinum level insurance, and she needed this because of, you know, the amount that she needed to pay for her daughter's medical condition, and it ended up costing her $500 to $600 less per month for the insurance. That was as good or better than what she had had under her employer, And because of Obamacare, her husband and she were able to start a new small business because they didn't have to worry about their health care, and that business is becoming very successful. So everything that Obamacare was supposed to do, it did for my sister, and everything it was supposed to do for the economy, my brother-in-law and my sister are in the position where they're going within this year, they're going to end up hiring people because the business has been so successful that they could have only done because of being able to afford health care without because of the exchanges. So that's
on
the success of Obamacare.
I really think that Obamacare is such an enabling thing for business and for people. You know, in one of my first appearances on Fox about Obamacare, you know, I mentioned to them that one of the most painful days of the year for people who own a small to medium-sized business is that day when they get the letter from their insurance company that tells them how much their new premium is going to be, because healthcare costs keep going up and up and up. I have been, and there's like a CEO of the company, and they have to make the decision to get cheaper insurance that offers less coverage just because it's too expensive. So healthcare is a big deal in this country, and it's a big problem for small and medium-sized businesses. And that's irrespective of Obamacare. And this is one of the reasons why people like me, and I think you were for it as well, Lee, and many other liberals and progressives were for single-payer health care, because health care shouldn't be up to companies to provide for their employees. It should be something that we all get just as citizens of this country and pay for through our taxes. It's actually hurting American businesses to have to do this, whereas other countries, this is not a cost that businesses have to factor into their profit and loss statements. It's just part of their taxes. But one of the other things that I wanted to talk about here regarding this 5-year anniversary of Obamacare is something that Steve Bannon on MSNBC.com under Rachel Maddow's name. And he listed 10 failed predictions of Republicans regarding the Affordable Care Act. You know this is going to be good, right, Lee?
This is
something that I've had to fight because I go on a lot of conservative media and talk about I must have had, Lee, something like 50, 60, 70 appearances just on Obamacare trying to fight some of these ridiculous statements and predictions. Let me just get right into it. Bannon lists failed prediction number one, that Americans won't enroll in the Affordable Care Act. Of course, now that's not true. The opposite's true, and millions, something like 19 million people have signed up for health care benefits through the Affordable Care Act. Failed prediction
That includes the Medicaid expansion. Just so that we're honest here.
True. But that is a part of the Affordable Care Act.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So that counts. Failed prediction number two, the Affordable Care Act won't meet its enrollment goals. Of course, we know that that's not true.
You are getting your use out of that sound effect tonight.
You know, Republicans are going to cause me to burn that buzzer out one of these days. I know that they're going to. Just because they're so wrong all the time, you know. I would happy to reach a point one day where we don't have to call out all of the lies and misstatements by Republicans. But unfortunately, we are not there.
No.
Oh, I love this one, Lee. I love this one. Insurers will want no part of the Affordable Care Act system. That's one of my favorites. This has been the biggest boon to the insurance companies since illness began. I mean, this is
It was one reason that I was opposed to the way it was originally configured. It was one reason I wanted there to be the government option or single payer is because of the amount of profit that it will be given to insurance companies.
Yeah, you know, progressives were architecting a plan. This is not what it would look like. On the other hand, you know, 19 more million people have health care. And, you know, as a first step, I'll take it. Let's put it that way. It's not my ideal situation. I'll take it.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, again, this is obviously, this is a net good, even if it's not what we would absolutely want. I obviously, just from my own family story, I can't sit here and argue about it.
Hey, Tracy, stand by because we're gonna get to you. I promise. Yes. So. Sorry, can you hear me, Lee?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, sorry about that. I'm gonna go through most of the rest of these real quickly because we're gonna run out of time. But I just want to this one I want to definitely mention and talk about because I think this one's great. Failed prediction number four: the economy will suffer terribly because of Obama. Well, you know. When Obamacare was passed, if I'm not mistaken, unemployment was well over 9%, and of course now it's under 6%.
Mm-hmm.
The stock market is better, employment is better, in every measurable way, the economy is better. So That's obviously ridiculous. And Lee, let me just go through some of these other ones really quickly, because otherwise we'll never get through this. Number five, even if Americans enroll, they won't pay their premiums. Failed prediction six, even if people pay their premiums, the flawed ACA structure will send premiums soaring. Let me just point out that not only have premiums not soared, they're going up by a lower rate than they were before the Affordable Care Act was passed. Failed prediction number seven, the Affordable Care Act won't reduce the uninsured rate because it will only help those who already have coverage. Obviously, we know that's not true. 19 million more people have insurance than had before. Failed prediction number eight, the Affordable Care Act will lead to a net loss on overall coverage. Failed prediction number nine, the Affordable Care Act will lead to higher deficits and a weaker fiscal footing for the nation. You know what? We ought to talk about this one, Lee, because, in fact, the Affordable Care Act, the price tag, and Bennin notes this, is less than had been predicted. It costs less than we thought it would.
Yeah,
actually, this is something that I said would be the case, right? Because obviously, you know, we had all of these uninsured people, when they did get sick, going to the emergency room. That's the least cost-effective way of dealing with non-life-threatening illnesses. You know, all these other things were happening. People weren't able to work. You know, this is not an ideal situation. So the Affordable Care Act not only has not led to higher deficits, not only not has not hurt the economy, it seems like the economy is doing better because of it. Failed prediction number 10, Americans will end up hating the coverage that they receive through the Affordable Care Act. By and large, people seem to really like it. Gallup released a poll on Friday that said that 71% of people enrolled in Obamacare said the coverage is through the exchanges. These are people only in exchanges. They said the coverage was good or excellent, 71%. Another 19% said it was fair, while 9% I'm sorry, did I lose you? Did you lose me or one or the other?
It just dropped out.
Sorry about that. So, it turns out it's been a good 5 years. But again, Republicans, you know, keep saying a lot of the same things that they were saying. There was an article, Lee, I don't know if you saw it, in Forbes magazine. I've been reading a lot of Forbes lately. I don't know what that means. But anyway, there was an article in Forbes magazine by Sally Pipes, a conservative, and she called Obamacare at 5 years old a disappointment. She put all these things down. A lot of the stuff is wrong. As a matter of fact, I just refuted some of the things that she said, but it's interesting. They can't let go of that one, though, can they? They've gotta put all this crap out there about Obamacare, even though it's not true.
Right. And, you know, I wonder how many people are putting that information out there who actually are on it.
Well, we'll have Ted Cruz and his wife on it soon, won't we? I'm sure we'll get totally unbiased, anecdotes from them on Obamacare. I'm sure that there's some angle of that. But anyway, I wanted to give you time, Lee, for your rude rant of the week. What topic do you think you've got for us?
Well, if you'd like to go to our caller, that's totally fine. But
Okay. You know, we'll come back to that. You want us to come back to that?
Whatever you would like. I am teed up and ready to go if you want me to. I defer to you, sir.
You know what? We've had our special guest holding for a while. Let me bring her on, because I think she is really awesome. Let me go to a commercial first, and then I will bring in our special guest on LGBT issues. We'll be right back. What's the biggest fallacy about diamonds? More facets are better and will create more fire. Doesn't that make sense? Nothing could be farther from the truth. In fact, larger facets create more fire. The new Blaze Cut is a unique square diamond with a fabulous display of colors never before seen emanating from a diamond.
In fact, the Blaze diamond has 9 times the fire of any other round diamond of the same size. It took a genius to invent the Blaze diamond, and an amazing artist to highlight the beauty in fine jewelry. View Blaze Diamond Jewelry by Bez Ambar on Badler.com, BADLER.com, or search Blaze Diamond on YouTube to see remarkable videos. Experience this new innovation by coming to Maurice Badler Fine Jewelry in New York City, 485 Park Avenue between 58th and 59th Streets. Visit Badler.com for more information or call 800-M-BADLER. That's 800-M-B-A-D-L-E-R.
Zero Juliet uploaded.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Making Sense with Steve Laser and the Rude Pundit. And Rude One and everybody, I would like to welcome Tracy Ledford to the show. Tracy caught my attention by the fact that she has recently started up and is the head of an LGBT outreach group on Facebook. And so I have her on to talk a little bit with us about LGBT issues. So welcome to the show, Tracy.
Well, thank you for having me. I didn't know if you wanted me to go on. And actually, his rant got my attention.
The Rude One's rant?
Yeah. I was interested in hearing what he was going to say.
Well, you know what? When we get done with our part, you stay on, and you can hear what he has to say, and you can comment on it. But yeah, I'm really glad to have you on with us, Tracy, because LGBT issues are very important to me. And I think what you're doing is terrific. I'm going to get to your group in just a second. But before we do that, let's first get a little bit about you. What can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes, I'm 44. I'm transgendered. I've been transgendered since I was 15. Went to, never had an issue, been very successful at being transgender, not to the point of like what you see like on Jerry Springer where people go out here and go, oh, by the way, I'm a man. No, I never did anything like that. Any man I've ever dated, I was always upfront and honest and just told them the truth. You know, this is what I am and this is the deal. So by being honest with myself, that gave me more incentive to tell other people, you need to be honest with yourself and be true to yourself, and which is a lot of the reason why I started getting more and more involved with the gay community. The turning point in my life back in the 90s was Matthew Shepard. When he was tied to that fence in Wyoming for all those hours, left without his shoes, that was my waking up moment when I said, this madness has got to stop. Somebody has got to do something. And that went on the media for a while, and then the media went on to something else, just like they do today. They'll talk about this plane that crashed today, or was it yesterday, the Air France, you know, that was horrible that happened. But they don't talk about all the transgendered women that are murdered every single day. And so I thought that I would bring attention to that. And when I enrolled in college, it was at Vanderbilt and then Texas A&M. I got involved, heavily involved, into the gay rights movement. It was in many rallies, and I just decided that I needed to start to do more in my community, because I could sit around all day long and gripe and complain, but what good is that when you can get out here and you have a voice, you can use your voice, and you can make people hear you. You can't always make them understand it. Now, I have a degree in psychology, and I learned that from the get-go. You know, you can talk to them till you're blue in the face. And their main excuse and their main I guess logic is religion. Religious liberty. If, as far as I'm concerned, we have too much religion. We need to draw some of that back.
Well, you know, the Rudwin and I were talking about that earlier with the way Ted Cruz announced his candidacy for president. It seems like he's deliberately signaling to everybody that he's for all of that old social conservatism, you know, anti-women's equality, anti-gay rights, all that other thing. You know, I think that would signal some real problems for LGBT equality if he ever was elected. But let's go into some of the specifics here that the gay community is dealing with, and also talk about some of the progress. For instance, gay marriage. You know, when you and I talked about this, have gay marriage.
Oh yes. Okay. Like for example, from my own personal experience. My husband and I, we've been together for almost 15 years, and we got legally married in North Carolina last year. And I was able to get every single thing changed. So security card, insurance, everything. But in the state of Georgia, I could not get the last name on my driver's license changed.
They don't have gay marriage in Georgia yet, right?
Right, they don't, and they don't recognize it. But that does not stop me from going to the DMV, and I do. I go once a week to the DMV in Oxford, Georgia, with my marriage license and my marriage certificate, and the supervisor meets me and says, you know, we can't do this. And I said, well, you know what? The Supreme Court will issue a ruling, and I will be here. So I have to deal with that. And the fact that it's recognized in 37 states and the District of Columbia, but not here, is like a slap in the face because it's discrimination. Marriage is marriage. I don't care what color you paint it. And all we want is to be acknowledged and to have the same rights as every heterosexual couple enjoys. If something happened to my husband right now in the state of Georgia, I would not be entitled to any benefits that he gets in Georgia. Now, with him being a veteran, I would be entitled to that and his survivor benefits. But that's about it when it comes to Georgia. But I'm not the only one going through it. I mean, look at Alabama. Alabama has just completely went back into the 1960s. And it's absolutely ridiculous. I've never understood why Republicans are so down and determined to have their nose stuck into what people do in their bedrooms.
Yeah, except when their guys do it. Except when their elected people do it. Then it's
okay. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I want to talk to Ted Cruz and some of these Republicans and mention the word sodomy. And them tell me how much they're against them, just so I can say, oh, so you're telling me that you've been married for 35 years and you've never had oral sex with your wife, or your wife has never had oral sex with you? Because that is sodomy. And, of course, you know, the Republican, he'll probably deny it just last dying breath. But we're constant. Oh, and that Religious Liberties Act that they're trying to pass here in Georgia too, where they can openly discriminate against anyone that they perceive as being gay, reminds me a lot of ENDA. And
I'm glad you brought up ENDA because I think that's the next big battle. I mean, obviously we have to continue fighting to get gay marriage legalized in all the rest of the country. But I think ENDA is the next battleground that I think we all really need to start focusing on. Could you tell people what ENDA is all about?
Oh, yes, I can, because so many people, they don't know what it is. And what ENDA is the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. It's proposed in the U.S. Congress. It prohibits discrimination on orientation and gender identity by employers with at least 15 employees. Now, the Republicans have held that up and held it up without realizing if they would go ahead and pass it, the workforce would be stronger, people would be more united, because that's what this whole LGBT movement's about. It's about unity. And there are a lot of private companies that have already established where they won't discriminate based on sexual orientation or gender identity, but that only applies to that company. It does not apply to the state. So you see, that's where our problem is. Right, we've got to get it passed
like
further.
That. Now, one thing that I wanted to point out, Tracy, is that when you're talking about ENDA and employment non-discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity, this is actually something that has been going on. This fight and country, not country, states and municipalities enacting laws. Pennsylvania became the first state to ban public sex. 75. Wisconsin became the first state to ban abortion in 1982. So this has been something that this country has been moving towards for well over 40 years now, and it is about time. So far, 21 states, the District of Columbia, and over 140 cities and counties have enacted bans of one sort or another on this discrimination. One of the things that we have to keep our eye on is that one of the ways that Republicans are sort of trying to divide this effort is they're trying to, well, first of all, they're trying to kill it, period. But in the places where it seems to be going forward, what they're trying to do is make sure that the law only applies to sexual orientation and doesn't include gender identity. So transsexual people, transgender, I should say, are not in those instances. So that's something that we have to guard against. The LGBT community has to guard against being divided that way. But there is a federal law that has been passed in the Senate. It was passed in 2013. President Obama has indicated that he will sign it. The only thing holding it up is the House. And, of course, you know, the House is Republican and it has been held up in committee, and that's actually where it stands right now. It's held up in three different committees. So that's
exactly
something that we have to keep pushing, and it's going to be difficult, right, because obviously the Republicans don't want to do it, but it's something that we have to keep organizing to make happen.
The thing that hurts me the most about the discrimination part, especially with transgender individuals, is you've seen my picture. I'm very passable. I can live in the daylight. My husband and I, we go to straight bars. I put my makeup on. I go do what I need to do in the daytime, and I never have any issues. But I do have friends that are transgendered, and you can tell with all certainty that that is a man. And they get openly discriminated against, like in a Waffle House. Absolutely refused to serve this person, and people were making fun of this person, and it was almost like being back in junior high school, or yeah. You know, you got this one bully just terrorizing everybody else. And as to the gay marriage thing, I talked with you about this yesterday, and I would like anybody to give me an answer to this, because the Supreme Court wants an answer. And what I want to know is, how does my marriage affect yours or anyone else's marriage? How does my marriage, if your marriage, if you're divorced or your friend is divorced, am I the cause of that? Am I the breakdown of your marriage? No, I'm not. But that seems to be the argument.
Yeah, I'm twice divorced, Tracy, and I can tell you that the LGBT community and LGBT people had nothing to do with my divorce in either case. I mean, this is one of the silliest
exactly.
things.
Exactly.
I mean,
and that's what the Supreme Court wants to know, is how does a gay marriage affect or destroy or in any way have an impact on a heterosexual marriage? Because whether the straight world knows it or not, we've been married for years. We've been married for... we'll say 70 years, because we found loopholes. We found these little things called living wills, irrevocable trust, actual wills, found our ways to do it to where we would get some benefits. But then again, states caught on to that. And in certain states, if your spouse or your husband or your wife is in the hospital, they can stop you from going into the hospital. And just by coincidence, about a couple of months ago, my husband was in a car accident, and about a mile from where we live, and I went up there, and I always carry my marriage license and my marriage certificate with me at all times. And they tried that with me. They, oh, no, you can't go back there. And I said, watch me. I'm his wife, and I'm going back there whether you like it or not. And I did. I went back there. And they did try to stop me. Yeah.
Lee, I'm sorry, we've sort of not involved in this conversation. I apologize. You know, Lee, I saw, and this is also for you, Tracy, obviously, but there was this great video that came out on YouTube about a year ago. And basically it had this gay male, and he was going around talking to straight people and asking them what their opinion was of various LGBT rights issues, marriage, employment, all of that. And then he asked them, so when did you decide you were straight? And I think that was like one of the funniest and most poignant examples of why, you know, this whole idea that it's a choice is absolutely ridiculous. I never chose to be straight. I'm just straight. That's the way I was.
I chose to be gay or transgendered. It just happened.
Exactly.
I knew when
that's
I
just,
was five.
Yeah,
that's
just the way
it is.
That's how
I am. Yes.
Did you see that video, Lee? Sorry. Did we lose Lee?
Okay, like, we might have lost Lee. Well, hopefully we didn't, but, I'm sure Lee's heard that, you know, Ben Carson commented about if you go in prison straight, you come out gay, which coming from a physician was the most idiotic thing I think I've heard in quite a while. You cannot be made gay. You can't be converted. The only way you can be converted gay or made gay is if it's already in you, if you already have the innate desire to do it. And there's a lot of people that are in the closet or they claim to be bisexual. You're not. Freud said we were all born bisexual, and as we develop, we branched off to either straight or homosexual. And Sigmund Freud also said that homosexuality is nothing to be ashamed of. It should not be hid in the closet. He had wrote a letter in response to a mother who had wrote him about her gay son, which you can read this on the Huffington Post. And why the outrage over gay marriage, I will never, ever understand it, because when you get right down to it, who cares?
Exactly.
I mean, seriously, who cares what you, I don't care what you do in your bedroom. So why would you or my next door neighbor care what I do in mine?
It just
defies all logic to me as to why anybody would care. And I personally, along with the rest of the gay and LGBT community, we're just tired of being second-class citizens. That's
yes.
why
it's
I started my
It's unbelievable in
2015.
Yes.
Oh,
exactly.
It is. Exactly.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I want to hear. So first of all, what brought you to create this group, and what's your group all about? What does it do?
Well, about 8 days ago, I was sitting on the couch watching TV, and I was thinking there has to be something more that I can do, because I'm tired of seeing people being beat up because they're gay or someone thinks they're gay, or people killing themselves because of them being gay. So I started this on Facebook, on my page. I started a group called LGBT Outreach, and it started out with 3 members. And within 7 days, it has went over 504 members.
Wow.
And continues to grow. And what I do, And actually what we do, we're just basically one big family. We fight all forms of discrimination, social injustices, bigotry, violence towards the LGBT community, violence against women, child exploitation, child sex trafficking. I'm in contact with the ACLU every chance I get, like with the DMV here in Georgia, bringing a lawsuit against them. That's what my group does. We fight for those who can't or are afraid to fight for themselves. We give a voice to the voiceless, basically.
And how do people find you guys? How do they talk to you or interface with you?
The easiest way is to go on my Facebook page, Tracy Ledford, and they can either send me a friend request or send me a message. They have to send me a friend request regardless. And they can send me a message saying they would like to be in the group. I will automatically add them in. I'm up every morning at 3 a.m. checking to see who wants to join. And I will add whoever wants to be part of the group. And we have rallies coming up. There's going to be a benefit coming up for that young man that was beat a couple of days ago outside of a Walmart. So that's the easiest way to do it is just go through Facebook, Tracy Ledford, send me a friend request, send me a message saying you'd like to join, and I will add you. There's even a way that you can ask to be invited, but I've had some people say that just takes too much work, so I just tell people just go to Tracy Ledford, and it's spelled TracyLedford, and send me a friend request and a message, and I will add you.
All right, and
I also supply my phone number, and I answer a lot of people's questions most of the day.
Okay. Tracy, thank you so much for being on the show. I think that was great information, and I hope to have you on the show again, and hopefully we'll be talking about some victories on some of these key issues very soon in the future.
Well, yes, because we got the Supreme Court is here on April the 28th. And speaking of, did you get Lee back?
No, actually, Lee had to go, so he gave his apologies. But he'll be back next week. I know. He's Lee is just wonderful. I love having him on the show. But as I said, that's all we have for today's show. Thank you to everybody for listening. The next episode of Making Sense with Steve Laser and the Rude Pundit will air live next Tuesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Live Talk Radio. Follow the Rude Pundit at rudepundit.blogspot.com and follow me and the show on Twitter at Stephen Laser, on Facebook at Making Sense with Steve Laser, and on my blog at stevelaser.blogspot.com. Until next time, have a great rest of your day.